Hello, and welcome to another episode of Extra Features Movie Review Podcast, where we review new movies, old movies, and we spoil a lot of stuff. I'm Kevin.
I'm Macho Man.
Well, all right, then. I'm Doug. I don't know how to follow that up.
So how's it going, Doug? I'm sitting here on Facebook last night, and I finished my job because I'm back to work. And man, standing is hard for me, but sorry, I'll get used to it. Not because I'm fat, just because it's been a while. And I read about this hot Mountain Dew thing.
Yes, it's the hot and spicy Mountain Dew. I took my son to 7-Eleven last night. He wanted a Slurpee. He had just gotten his COVID-19 booster, so how could I say no? We went there. I was looking around. I saw that. I said, how could we pass this up? It's hot and spicy Mountain Dew. We got it. We brought it home. And we poured it into two separate cups. And we each drank our half. And my God, was it awful. It's just pouring it out. You nearly pepper spray yourself with all the cinnamon that's in it. And that's the worst part, is the smell, because that's where the cinnamon is. It got all in my nasal cavity, so that's where the spicy was. The drink itself tasted just like berry Mountain Dew, but you nearly pepper spray yourself smelling it.
Kevin, have you had a Diet Mountain Dew ever?
I've had Diet Mountain Dew. In the States, you can get it. I like it. I like Diet Mountain Dew.
Yeah, I don't think you would get a Mountain
Dew. Have it here.
No, we do not. And also speaking, I still have Cherry Coke from my experience when I was there a month ago. But I have good news. A friend of mine is going to Buffalo on Wednesday. NYC. Close to Doug, but I will not be with him. And he promised to pick me up some more Cherry Coke. So I will be good for another month at least. So, Calvin, you're in town. How does it feel? Did you go to Edmonton yet?
I did go to Edmonton last weekend. And, I'm at home and I'm bored.
Which is weird for you. Yeah, I never get texts. I'm bored. I'm like, weird. Kevin's never bored.
I'm bored. This weekend I was bored. There was nothing to do. Just work around my apartment.
What's your next con?
My next con, I'm going to New York Comic Con in 2 weeks. Okay.
Now, I have a weird problem lately. Like, so my daughters have now discovered I have a basement. All these years I've had kids, they did not realize there was a basement or literally spend any time in the basement. So this summer, my teenagers discovered the basement is where we're going to live.
Yes. Now you can walk out of your basement.
So I'm back upstairs in my living room, and I'm like, seeing what civilization's like again. And I'm discovering lots of things I have on DVD are not available on streaming. Mm-hmm. So, like, I have Evie Primrose I needed to watch with Anthony Perkins, not on streaming. And I think the movie's called Shadow of Fear I'm watching now. It's got a good cast, too. It's got Peter Coyote, it's got Jane Spader, Aidan Quinn, Robin Tunney, which he worked a lot. Lacey Chabert. I'm like, wow, this cast is pretty good. Not on streaming. I'm like, what the hell is going on? And I had this problem trying to find a movie called The Groom Wore Spurs, a 1951 Ginger Rogers movie. I did find on YouTube. The worst transfer I've seen in a long time. So I'm trying to figure this out. So now I'm getting kicked out. So I had to kick out my children out of the basement today so I could watch at least a film that I couldn't watch. Is this a problem you guys are having, or is it just me because I still possess physical media?
I generally don't have a problem with that. Generally, the stuff that I watch, if my kids want to watch it, they'll sit down with me. If not, they'll go off and do their own stuff.
Well, the problem with me, I can't get to my DVD player because I only have one. It's in the basement. So,
I obviously don't have that problem since I stream everything. So I have a DVD player. I put all my DVDs in one place again. And I'm like, I'm not looking at any of these. I have all these new criteria. Take them out of the case and put them in the Blu-ray player. It's easier just to go to my streaming. See if I can find it somewhere.
But if it's not streaming, do you actually play your DVD is my question.
No, unless I have to watch it.
Okay. So unless I may put it on the list. And I or... Fair enough. Then,
I don't know.
Things that did need to be streaming. I'm going to give my opinion ahead of time. Pinocchio. It should have been in theaters, right?
Surprisingly, they went right to streaming.
I'll go you one better. Should it have been made?
We'll get there. Does anybody have a cast list handy? Who's doing cast? Not me.
I got a cast list right here. We got a... First of all, it's written and directed by Robert Zemeckis, starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Jiminy Cricket, Tom Hanks as Geppetto, Benjamin Evan Ainsworth as Pinocchio, Cynthia Erivo as the Blue Fairy, Keegan-Michael Key as Honest John, and Lorraine Bracco as the Seagull Sophia.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's great casting as Lorraine Bracco.
I didn't know that it was Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Jiminy Cricket.
I did know that because I read the credits at the beginning of the movie.
Definitely in the "this movie does not need to be made" category. I find it really unnecessary. And along the way, I mean, and listen, visually, it's impressive. I mean, It's like The Lion King. It's an anime movie with a couple of live action things thrown in. Like Tom Hanks is live action, obviously, and a few of the other human actors. But mostly it's CGI characters and environments, animals, everything. And more or less adheres to the Pinocchio, the classic Pinocchio movie story, with some shifts, some changes that I think were unnecessary. To try to explain things like Geppetto's wife had died, which is why he makes the cuckoo clocks. Geppetto's son had died, which is why he wanted another son, a real boy. You know, those little things, those little touches. Instead, couldn't he have just been the old clockmaker and never had a kid and always wanted to have a family? I don't know. That's pretty much the original story. And then, you know, like not having the... On the Paradise Island, you can smoke cigarettes and drink beer, so it had to be root beer. And the whole thing is like the kids are brought out there and then told to do stuff. So the kids are doing what they're told, and it's Pinocchio that doesn't do what he's told, and he's the one that survives.
Mm-hmm.
So the kids do what they're told and say, go and wreak havoc, and then they become donkeys. While... you know, Pinocchio turns out he's a good boy all along instead of... And the other thing I didn't like was he had to lie to get out of a situation rather than how lying should be a bad thing, perceived as a bad thing. He had to get the keys, so he had to lie in order to let his nose grow to get the keys out. That to me means like lying is a useful thing as opposed to lying is something you shouldn't do or you get, you know, your nose will grow. And yeah, all those little changes, and like Monstro was in it for like 2 seconds, and I just, you know, and then I guess he has superpower legs; he can hoverboard himself through and beat the race giant monster whales and stuff. So I just found it was like an unnecessary film, and it was not an enjoyable experience to watch.
Nah, I mean, this film literally showed a pile of CGI shit. I was, why? I don't know. I agree. It should not have been made. For me, the highlight was Cynthia Erivo when she was singing When You Wish Upon a Star. Mm-hmm. That was brilliant. I mean, she's an amazing singer. Hearing her sing that classic song, that was great. That was 2 minutes of the entire movie. So I got 2 minutes enjoyment out of an hour and a half film that, I don't know, I did not really enjoy this.
Well, to continue with this trashing of this piece of crap that Kevin made me watch, it looked like it was all shot in a stage to me all the time. I never felt any of it felt real. It all felt fake. Like, just the way they shoved all the anime. I'm like, this is boring. That boat scene looked terrible. And they're in there, I'm like, why is this here? And Tom Hanks and that mustache, what the hell is up with that? Looked awful. I'm like, Tom Hanks, stop doing crap. I don't know what's going on with him, like this and that Larry Crown movie and whatever the one was in between. I hated that one too. Cloud Atlas, which I'm not a big fan of. I'm just getting to the point, Zemeckis, leave this crap alone. And I don't find Pinocchio interesting. I really don't like the animated cartoon. I don't like the story. So this is just like, I never need to see another Pinocchio again. But of course, Del Toro's doing one, so I have to watch that one. But I'm having problems with this. I just don't find Pinocchio interesting as a character enough. He's a spoiled little mannequin.
Right.
And he needs an ass kicking by his parent who just wanted a kid. So he's got to let him do what he wants. Takes off, gets sold. I did like the marionette scene when Pinocchio's dancing. Like the people behind him I thought was really well done.
Yeah,
I will give that credit. That was probably my 2 minutes of enjoyment because I knew Cynthia Erivo was leaving. So that was going to be about it. I think this is pretty much unwatchable. I don't know how it's doing on Disney streaming, but I mean, I know Disney needs crap, but this is what we're giving me?
Well, I think someone made the decision not to release it in theaters and it wasn't that strong.
Oh, I agree with that person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm sure it's actually done all right on streaming.
I don't know. Hopefully.
All right, what's next?
Should we check in on the day shift?
Yeah, I don't like the day shift. I prefer the night shift.
Well, the day shift, you get Jamie Foxx, Dave Franco. Just scrolling through the cast list, see if there's any other big names. Snoop Dogg, how could I forget Snoop? And Peter Stormare is probably the last big name we got going here. And directed by J.J. Perry, who's from 87 North, one of the John Wick guys.
Okay. It's high concept. I don't mind the idea of killing vampires for economic purposes. You need the money, so somebody's got to do it. And there's an international, almost like a, I don't know what you call it, a cabal of vampire hunters and stuff. I just didn't. I'm not a huge fan of Jamie Foxx, and I just thought that it was kind of meh. I didn't love it.
Fair. I went into this movie for the action. I knew it was an 87 North production. I think that's the name of the company, but I've enjoyed all their action films, and this one had some action scenes that did not disappoint. The raid on the house in broad daylight with the other vampire hunters. I thought that was a lot of fun. The ending where they're storming, I guess it's like an abandoned mall. I thought that was fun. The action in this movie, I thought was definitely worth a watch. The story itself was okay. I didn't really care one way or another about any of the characters. I'm not a big Dave Franco fan. He did nothing in this movie to make me a fan of his. Jamie Foxx, I tend to like this one. He just felt like Jamie Foxx to me. I didn't really feel like he gave a great performance, but he wasn't awful. Yeah, for me, it was the action. The action was fun, but that's about it. It'll be forgotten in a few months.
Hold on. I want to back this up. I enjoyed this more than both you guys. Yeah. This reminds me of those 80s movies I used to rent at the video store where they never got movie releases. They just sort of showed up. I had a delight watching this film. Perfect for Netflix. It's exactly what I expect. It didn't offend me. I had fun watching this. I think Jamie Foxx was doing nothing special, but I like the storyline. I like the hunting of the vampire scene. I thought that Dave Franco was fine, didn't really upset me, but I had a good time. The acting is terrible. Everybody is terrible in this film, but the storyline was just fun to watch. I find it kind of did what it was supposed to do. Have enjoyment. Like Doug says, the action's great. Like, I'm not watching an 80s action direct-to-video for the storyline usually. Usually I think, but the storyline to me worked. I like them selling teeth. Mm-hmm. I thought Snoop Dogg worked really well in this film when he showed up.
Yeah, but when you compared it to the 80s action films, I would take any of those leads over Jamie Foxx.
Oh, absolutely.
Give me Jean-Claude Van Damme. Give me Stallone. Give me Schwarzenegger. Hold on, any of those guys.
You're going too high. I'm talking Cynthia Rothrock. I'm talking Billy Blank. I'm talking that level. Like, remember Brian, whatever his name is, he used to play football, had a movie too, right?
Bosworth
had the Boz, had one. So did Howie Long. Like, those are the films I'm comparing this to on that level.
Right. Okay.
And I think Jamie Foxx does an admirable job for what he has to work with. I mean, his career is pretty much over. Like, he's just living on his name now. So is Dave Franco. He's living on his name.
But Dave Franco's directing now.
Well, because he needs to, because nobody will hire him to do anything, because I saw this. And I'm like, no. My only problem is the villain should have been a little bit stronger. I thought she was just overacting. It seemed like a television show to me, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. I could see that.
I did like this. Is it forgettable? Absolutely. But if they make a two, I'm 100% watching it.
Oh, yeah, I'll definitely watch a sequel. I'm not saying I wouldn't. I enjoyed the action in this movie. I just was not impressed by the acting.
You shouldn't be. There's nothing here to be impressed by. I just think it's fine. I think somebody that likes action would enjoy this film. I mean, you're not going to go, ooh, look, Dave Franco's in. We got to watch that. But I liked it. I liked the boss of the movie. I thought he was fun. I just got things kind of worked. I'm sorry you had to come by, Doug.
You know what? So am I, actually. But I came by, let's see, starring Hugh Bonneville, Kelly MacDonald, Purcell Ascott, I think is how you pronounce his name. And that's about it that I could see on my list here. If you want, I could start with this one.
Go ahead.
I thought Hugh Bonneville gave a really good performance. He was very strong. My problem with this movie was that it shifted to three different protagonists over the course of the movie. It started with one person, shifted to that person's mother, and then shifted to the first person's best friend. It really gave the movie a disjointed feel to me. I think if it had stuck with one protagonist throughout the entire thing, it would have been a lot stronger. I thought Hugh Bonneville as the bad guy, he was fantastic. I'm a big Kelly MacDonald fan. I loved her in Boardwalk Empire on HBO. Loved her in the Trainspotting movies. Here, I don't think she was given enough to do. I think the scenes that she was in, she was very good. But I don't think she was used to her full potential here. I felt that her role was cut short, to say the least. I'm trying not to spoil anything here for people who haven't seen it, but I guess at the top we do say we spoil things. So, the first protagonist is Kelly MacDonald's son. He gets killed about half an hour in. She goes to investigate his death. She gets killed, and then the best friend goes to investigate both of their disappearances, and he ends up taking Hugh Bonneville down in the end. Like I said, Hugh Bonneville was fantastic, but it felt pretty disjointed to me.
So, Kevin, did you see this?
I did not see it.
Okay. Well, I did watch this piece of junk, and Doug, you're spot on. Now, let's go back to the scene when the first protagonist figures out what's going on. Mm-hmm. He trips, and he's never seen again.
Yeah.
What the hell was that? I was like, oh, okay. I kind of know where this movie's going. Nope, no, I don't. I have no idea. We don't need him anymore. I'm like, I just spent the first half an hour getting to know this person, knowing his motivations, him telling his friend, And his friend goes, I'm out. So I'm like, okay, something's going to happen to him. His friend's going to have to come back in. I got it. Nope. He doesn't come back in. And that's really about it. That's it. That storyline's over. And I'm kind of like, what? And Hugh Bonneville just kind of goes off. Then the cops start coming into this film. And nothing happens. Like, literally nothing happens with the cop. And then the one cop thinks he did it. But I'm like, what proof do you have? Like, you've given us nothing to work with here. Why the cops, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Literally just show up and leave. I'm like, what are you guys doing? They walked around the house. That's my safe room. Okay, I'm leaving. I'm like, I didn't understand why they were still pursuing him. And then Kelly McDonald gets involved. I'm like, really? You just slapped your son in the face, told him to get out, and then magically you become a detective?
Well, she felt bad. She wanted to find out what happened to him. But
there's that whole computer nonsense I thought was weak. Mm-hmm. Like, he took photos. I'm like, he's not dumb enough to take photos. I really don't think he would have. You know, I think he took photos of the actual artwork I would give him.
Mm-hmm.
But his friend posing for them, I'm like, really? I couldn't buy that part. And then, of course, Kelly McDonald screws up and gets herself. I'm like, really? Where's this film going? We just did the same thing we did in the first act and the second act. Then I'm like, well, either this guy's dead and it's all over, or there'll be a resolve, which there was.
Yeah.
And I have to agree with you. I found this a slog to get through.
Yeah, really. It almost would have been better if it was like a TV miniseries.
Yes.
With, you know, one, like three episodes long, one episode, you know, start off with the kid, the mom, and then the best friend. And then that would have been easier to watch.
I 100% agree with you on that. I thought the dialogue put me to sleep most of the time. And then when the guy finally goes back in and his girlfriend gets involved, I'm like, this is getting ridiculous. Like, we just meet this woman and she's all over him. I'm like, shouldn't she? I mean, the names come up a few times, but we've never met her.
She was in the beginning. She was.
Is she there?
Yeah, that's why he said he's out of the.
Because she's pregnant. I can't.
Because she's pregnant, yeah.
Which is fine, but I'm just like, this film's like just Netflix picked it up because it had a couple names in it. Like, I really think that was it. I can't even recommend this to anybody. I did like the artwork. I thought the graffiti was nice.
Yeah, it was okay.
Why were they really doing it? I never understood what was the point of it.
And why would he take so much time to make it so perfect at the end?
Yeah.
When he has Hugh Bonneville, you know, taped up there, why would he take the time to make all the lines crisp and clean? It was a waste of time.
I absolutely agree with you. It was just a big pass for me. So maybe we should have had the Samaritan come in and clean it all up. That would have been quicker.
Yes. The Samaritan. I know it stars Sylvester Stallone. Who
and
else
some kid. That kid to somebody from something.
I've seen that kid.
He played Diego's son in season 3 of the Umbrella Academy. He is Javon Walton is the actor's name. And Pilu Asbeck was Cyrus, who's, I guess he was a boxer before becoming an actor.
Well, that kind of shows. I didn't know the 90s were back, Doug. Did I miss this film? Was it lost sitting in some room somewhere and somebody found it? Because this is a 90s superhero film for the full amount. I was sitting there going, I can't even watch this. This is so bad at times. Like, bland. I'm like, can we bring back Cobra? I hate that film, but at least I kind of got it. Stallone looks old and clunky and slow. It's really the best way I can describe him moving in this film. I feel bad for him. I'm like, okay, I know you're slow. I know you're jacked doing HGH. You look great, but you're moving slow. Like, I'm sorry, buddy. You just are. And trying to buy him in these action scenes is killing me at times. And I know when the mask goes on, that's not him. I'm convinced a body double comes in and does most of the action scenes.
Oh, yeah.
And just when he's talking to the kid, I'm like, is this Rocky again? Like, he's talking to some kid in Rocky. I just, I don't know how to describe this. I don't think it's unwatchable. I think it's perfectly fine, but nothing of interest happens. Literally nothing, and nothing's explained.
No, nothing is explained. And the big twist at the end
made no sense to me.
I guessed it immediately from the opening voiceover when they said, there were twins and one of them was good and one of them was, I'm like, oh, well, obviously we're following the bad guy, the nemesis in this movie, not the Samaritan. And I don't know, man. I love Sly. I love Cobra. I know you said you hate it. Cobra is one of my favorite 80s bad action movies. This one wasn't even really fun for me to watch. Usually with Sly, you could get some fun, dopey one-liners or whatnot. Not on Schwarzenegger level, but Sly is his own way. This one just wasn't fun. Like you said, it's a slog. It just... I think we were supposed to be gasping when he says, "You keep calling me the good guy. I'm not.
I'm the bad guy.
I think we're supposed to gasp, but I did not at all.
I pretty much agree with you guys. I mean, I thought Stallone looked good. First off,
he looks good.
I was shocked because I'm like, to me, when I see pictures of Stallone, I'm like, why is he even doing films? But he was actually, he looked all right in this movie. Dystopian future. It's definitely a 90s action food. Like, it's like Blade and all that stuff. It's X-Men. It's cut from that kind of thought cloth of everybody wears black leather and kind of looks the same. There's nothing redeeming about this movie. It's just a 2-hour slog. I regretted watching it, but of course I have to watch it because it's a superhero thing. But Stallone was okay in it, and the villain I've seen before. He's done other stuff, and he's actually been pretty good at the other stuff. I just don't remember what it was he did.
I had no issues with the villain. I thought he was fine, but. What was he doing? He's following the plan. What plan? I didn't hear any plan. And all he's got is some hammer, which I'm not really sure how he knows how it works and everything. Like, I have so many questions about this universe that could have been explained in a couple throwaway lines would have helped me out a bit.
Yeah.
Maybe an origin story of why he needs water would have helped.
Okay, now I know who that guy was. Pilu Asbeck is the villain. He was in the final season of Game of Thrones. He was the leader of the pirate nation.
Okay.
He was Euron Greyjoy.
Oh, okay. I know who he is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got Crow. I this felt like the Crow to me at times.
Yeah, definitely the Crow.
See, I love the Crow. Love the Crow.
I just got to know, where does... these bad guys get all these henchmen at the end in that warehouse? Where did all those guys come from? How can he afford to have them all on the payroll?
Listen, Batman 66, he had henchmen every week. The Joker, Penguin, Egghead, Louis from Mesopotamia had guys. Bob Parker had people. It doesn't stop.
Yeah.
So who knows?
Career choice.
It's a career choice. You know, you just check the box off, you get picked up. Like Batman Animated, how many Joker, Penguin, Mr. Freeze villains are there? They just keep showing up.
But at least those guys rob banks to pay their henchmen. This guy, all he did was set off blackout bombs. And then
maybe it's on one of those Facebook groups.
Chaos?
Mass Chaos Facebook group or What's Up App. Maybe it's QAnon or whatever. Look at those Trump supporters. They didn't get paid to show up and they all did.
That's true, but
there's a whole legion of henchmen just waiting for jobs.
Just waiting for that moment of the phone call.
I will buy that. Okay. That's fair.
I mean, in fact, they want a hench for Trump. as much as anyone else, right?
That is true.
Just give them goon t-shirts and...
Bob the Goon. You're my number one guy.
Makes me think of the Spirit. The cloned henchmen that all had different names.
Okay, so the next film up is Father Stew. Now, why was somebody subjected me to one of those bad Mark Wahlberg films? But maybe you guys liked it. Other than Mark Wahlberg, is there anybody else in this?
Well, it was written and directed by Rosalind Ross. Also has the wonderful, and I'm using quotation marks, Mel Gibson, Jackie Weaver, and Malcolm McDowell is also in this movie. I will be honest, I did not watch this. I have an allergic reaction to Mark Wahlberg, so I avoided this.
I got to say, I have a Malcolm McDowell story, I have a Mark Wahlberg story, and I have a Jackie Weaver story. So I give them all to you. Malcolm McDowell, I met years ago at a Midnight Madness. Don't ask me the movie. I cannot remember. But I did meet him recently for some show, Son of a Creech, that he's doing. Couldn't have been wonderful. Still nice as ever. Still signed. Okay. Mark Wahlberg, I'm waiting. I see his car. It's coming. He actually stopped the car, rolled down the window, and signed. So I'll give Mark Wahlberg full credit. And Jackie Weaver... she did it. Let's just say she wasn't happy about me shoving something in her face. And literally it was shoved in her face. She was coming out of the car. She's just about to go in, right in her face. She's signed and walked in. So not the most pleasant person I met. Maybe it was just she didn't enjoy me shoving something in her face, but she didn't look like she was stopping unless I made her stop with something. So three people, two were great, one not so great. I've never met Mel Gibson, so I can't give you a Mel Gibson story. So, Kevin, could you hit this off? Because I've seen this a little while ago.
And yeah, it's been a couple of weeks for me, and other things have kind of stepped in. Excuse me.
Maybe bless you.
It was so good. I didn't hate this. I mean, it's okay. It's a story about redemption and finding forgiveness. You know, he's kind of like a down his luck boxer who doesn't really have much purpose, but you know, through religion, which is an interesting, because normally a lot of films don't even address some topics of religion, you know, he ends up becoming a priest. Like, he has a lot of questions about the church and religion and stuff like that, but and he helps a lot of people out along the way. So it's a, you know, an interesting story about an actual, like, I don't even know if this is based on an actual person or not.
It is.
Yeah. So that there's some real life inspiration there with a lot of Hollywood gems. So, some of these things were cute. The relationship with the Jackie Weaver character. And then is the stuff with his mother and his father. Mel Gibson was like, he was in a separate film. Just doing stuff on the side, and you can see where he gets his personality from Mel Gibson as his dad. So, but yeah, overall, I thought it was okay. Like, I it was one of those like 6 out of 10 films that, you know, I wasn't offended by it, and I wasn't particularly interested in it, but it was okay. It was entertaining. What do you think?
Well, I got bored. I didn't find the character interesting. I understood it was a redemption story. We pretty much know that from the beginning. Sure. But I'm just like, I don't care what you do. I don't find what you're doing interesting. Great, you found God. You're doing your church thing. You're becoming a minister. I don't care.
Right.
And I know you had your big health scare, but you're fine at the end of it. I'm just like, I still don't care. I just found his wife boring as an actress. Just adds nothing to the film in any way. Mark Wahlberg, it's just, I always find one for, oh, I'm going to play a real person movie, and this is his playing a real person movie. And I just think that's when he can't act, because he's trying to be just, it just doesn't act well in these films. I'm not saying he acts well in ever, but he always needs to want to do a real poopoo movies. I'm like, can you pick somebody that has some interest? Like Doug. I'm sure Doug walking his pug is more interesting than half this film at times. You know? I mean, maybe Doug's, he could play Tina. Like, that would be a stretch for him. And she can discuss the haunted window behind Doug that disturbs me every episode. I think there's better films for Mark Wahlberg if he wants to do them. But each his own, I guess. I don't think this is really going to, like I said, it's like a grandma film. Uh-huh. You put it on for your grandma, she doesn't get offended, and you leave the room and buy her some popcorn, and you just disappear and go watch Day Shift in the other room and just be happy that it's got some action in it. Yeah, this is the thing. And this really leads me to something I wanted to get discussed, but we'll get to our next film and I'll get into it then. Under a Silver Lake's our next film. Maybe yes. Father Stu could be buried under a silver lake. Never know.
Well, Under the Silver Lake was written and directed by David Robert Mitchell, starring Andrew Garfield, Riley Keough. Who else was in there? Ricky Lindholm, Jimmy Simpson. Just a lot of people in small roles. I honestly don't know how I felt about this movie. I don't know if it was a brilliant send-up of 50s noir detective or an overindulgent, overlong, just slog to get through. I'm really of two minds on this. That there are aspects I really liked, and then there are stuff that I just felt was, like I said, overindulgent. I think Andrew Garfield gave it his all, but I think the movie was definitely at least a half an hour too long. I think under 2 hours would have been the best place to go for this. I loved the Ricky Lindholm scenes. I thought they were hysterical. But they were two scenes out of many, many, many scenes. The mystery didn't quite make a lot of sense to me at the end, but it kind of held my interest. Like I said, I just watched it today or finished it up today. It was too long. I started last night, finished it up today. So it's still too fresh for me to have a full opinion on it. So what did you guys think?
Hold on. Is this before or after the Mountain Dew did you start it?
I started it at like 11 o'clock last night. And
so you could have been, just to help me, the Mountain Dew and cinnamon could have affected your viewing of this film.
That is true. I did watch The Samaritan right before I started watching Under the Silver Lake. So,
wow. So I will pick up where Doug left. I agree with, I love Riley Keough. I got to give Riley Keough credit. I do not think she gets enough credit as an actress. I loved her in the Twitter movie. I can't remember what it's called now. When she plays the stripper. Zola. Great. Zola. I love Zola. I love Riley Keough. I'm really going to have to watch that 3-hour movie, American something, I haven't watched. But no, I agree with Doug. I think scenes of this movie work. Now, when this movie really starts going off the rails for me, and I mean completely, I'm like, I don't get this anymore, is when he goes to visit the guy that writes every song ever.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I'm like, what is going on? It's just, I'm done. I'm like, is this some weird movie that Ken, the guy that directed Tommy, I really felt he took over.
Oh, Ken Russell?
Oh, yeah. My God. I think we went to a Ken Russell film. I'm like, I don't get this. I'm lost now. Completely lost when we got to the singing guy. I'm like, where are we going with this? I understand why you're doing it. But why? And then it just seems to me that's the part where I just started getting lost in this film. Like, I'm just like, I've had enough. I don't want to watch this anymore. This guy is just disturbing to me, and this whole scene is just bizarre. And I think I agree with Doug. I think there's parts of this film that are excellent. And parts of this film are just too bonkers for even me, who likes bonker films. But I'm just like, I'm not enjoying this anymore. It's too long. If it came in at 2 hours or an hour 45 instead of 2.5, I think I would have enjoyed it. But it's just too long to get to the point at the end. And I got to the end, I'm like, I don't care anymore. I've had enough. Can you go back and explain that singing scene to me again? Because I'm still confused. And it was just things like that. Like, I agree with you. The scenes, I thought the first hour worked great. And then the second half, I was just like, done. I can't watch this. And I gave it like a 4. Like, I didn't hate it. But I just like, this needs to be cleaned up in the second act. Somebody should have told them, okay, enough. We got to cut some things out. Kevin?
Well, to Doug's point, is it a brilliant film or is it an indulgent film? And it's both. Clearly, it's both. It's got hints of brilliance and an overindulgence. And some things could have been cut, some things could have been trimmed. But to that end, I love this movie. I enjoyed the fuck out of this, excuse my language, the heck out of this movie.
You can say whatever you want.
So weird. I generally don't like this with Kirsten's shows, but no, I just enjoyed this movie a lot. It was weird. The occasional Bernard Herrmann score nods were quite amusing to me. The sense of paranoia, you know, Garfield is an idiot. He's a drunken idiot who can't maintain a job, but somehow he puts together the conspiracy of all conspiracies. And I really dug it. I thought it was kind of interesting. He just stumbles across this pretty girl and swims in his pool, and we're not swimming in his pool, but lives downstairs, and then she's taken off to, you know, live in underground bunkers with celebrities who fake their own deaths. And you know, all these weird things that keep going on, like the owl woman that hides in and kills you and clearly kills the one guy and comes after Garfield, but he escapes. You know, like, was she part of the conspiracy or was she just one of those tales of weird LA? Like, who knows? And who was shooting at them while they were swimming in the reservoir of the Silver Lake? You know, and why did it appear so much like a dream that he had had and things like that? They're just, it's like an acid flashback in some ways, but, not that I know anything about that, but I mean, it was good. I really enjoyed it because it went on a limb. It tried something different. And I don't think we see enough of that. I think we see too much cookie cutter Hollywood films. Here's someone trying to create something different, like a modern noir. and you know, you can fail spectacularly and still create a good product.
So. See, I'd agree with you, except coming from his previous film, It Follows,
yeah.
I thought that was a really tight, well-told, creepy horror story that didn't overstay its welcome, but still provided some pretty interesting and spectacular visuals and moments that stuck with me. And I'm not sure if there will really be anything like that that sticks with me from this film.
Right.
Oh, I think that scenes in the bedroom might stick with you from this film, Doug.
Maybe.
Just saying, they will in mine, because every time I see her, that scene comes right back into my brain. That her singing with the other one, singing their songs.
I have a question. Do you guys think that Andrew Garfield was the dog killer?
No.
I don't think he killed that. I think he was too drunk.
Because the homeless people, they found the dog treats in his pocket.
Hmm. Yeah, but he could have picked them up. Andrew Garfield seemed to be picking up anything.
But didn't he have the dog treats in his pocket to try to attract the girl's dog?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Another unexplained thing.
Yes.
Speaking of dogs, what if they were soldiers?
Dog soldiers. Okay. That is written and directed by Neil Marshall. And let me get the cast list up here. Soldiers. And let's see. That stars Sean Pertwee, Kevin McKidd, Liam Cunningham, Emma Cleesby, and just a bunch of British soldiers.
So I'll start here. Doug, did this get added to the list because I made a comment on Facebook that I'd never seen this film?
Yes, that's exactly okay. why yes, I added it.
I thought. So I sat down to watch Dog Soldiers, and you know what? I was pleasantly surprised. I quite enjoyed this. I thought this was tight for what it was. This film has no money, and it's pretty evident it has nothing behind it. But I think they make things work. I was quite impressed how they kept very tight. They kept the action, but they don't really show you action at the beginning. It's more like just off screen. I'm like, this kind of works. And I thought the film really picked up when they got to the house. And yes. things started to move a bit more. And then finally, the film reveals what it's going to be. And I like that. And I was like, okay, this thing isn't blowing me away, but I think it's well done for what it was. I mean, I do find the monsters look a little corny because they don't really move. Do you know what I mean? They don't have a lot of movement, but he tries to hide them in shadows a lot. And I started laughing. I'm like, you have no money. These things, you just don't want to look like a guy in a suit. Cause that's what I'm seeing in the shadows. So I'm like, I'll give you a tempt in there. That woman that has her speech, I'm kind of like, why are you talking? You haven't really said much all film. Don't worry about me. I'll be fine. But I did like the kill with the guy outside in the truck.
Okay.
I thought that was quite good. So overall, I like this. I thought Petrie does a good job. I think I don't think I'll revisit this, but I did enjoy it.
Okay.
For what it was tight. I thought it was well done. It looked a lot like an indie to me.
Well, yeah.
Which it probably was, but no, I got full credit. I gave it a 6 out of 10, which is a likable score for me, and I enjoyed it. So I would recommend Dog Soldiers.
Yeah, I originally saw it because I like werewolf movies, and there's so very few good werewolf movies out there. I can name maybe 2 or 3 off the top of my head. And so when this one came out, I was like, all right, I'll give it a shot. The story seems interesting. And I'm also a big fan of survival horror, especially one location survival horror, like Night of the Living Dead. So everything just came together here. It was definitely low budget. It's Neil Marshall's first film. So he didn't have the huge budget that he would go on to get. But I think he really used it effectively here by hiring good actors. I think the actors in this movie are all very good. He actually hired dancers instead of stunt people to be the werewolves. So that way, so they moved differently than you
they
would.
They did. They definitely looked like they were standing up more. Like maybe all even on their tippy toes, like ballerinas, to make them look taller. I could see that.
Yeah, so it was dancers instead of stunt people. And I don't know, I've watched this movie 4 or 5 times now. I just go back to it as like a comfort film. And I really enjoyed it. I really like Kevin McKidd. I loved him in the HBO series Rome. So watching him in this movie, it's just a lot of fun for me. I really enjoy this movie.
So when you're rewatching a film, Doug, like you've said, you've seen this 5 times. Mm-hmm. Do you watch the film or are you doing something else? Or are you playing on your phone? Maybe you're vacuuming. Are you really sitting down to watch the film again?
It depends. Sometimes I'm doing other things, but this last time I actually just sat down and watched it. It had been a couple years since I'd seen it, and I got the new 4K release of the movie from Shout Factory. So I want to sit down and watch it in 4K. And I was like, yeah, this is the movie I remember. This, the way it used the werewolf mythology, people get injured, but then they get better as the night goes on. I loved stuff like that. I thought it was, I thought it's a really tight, well-scripted, fun film.
I guess, I mean, it wasn't 3,000 years ago, but I mean, werewolves could have existed then.
Yes.
They're the Dog Soldiers.
Yes.
So, 3,000 Years of Longing, directed by George Miller, starring the two big names, Tilda Swinton and Idris Elba.
Kevin, did you see this? No.
No, I did not see it. I want to see it, but I did not.
So me and Doug, I guess I'll start. Oh, this is one of those films. I don't know if I loved it or hated it. Again, I parts of it I quite liked. But again, I just felt it took too long to get where it needed to go. But maybe the problem is I wanted more. I look great. I want to give this film full credit. George Miller, beautiful looking film. Thank you. I have no issues with the shot selection. I have no, I just wanted more from it. I really felt there could have been done more. I love the flashback scenes. I was totally into when they're telling the origin of the djinn. I thought that was great. Absolutely fell in love with those. But I just, and I like the opening part of the film. The guy's trying to bring her in food. And she's like, no, just leave it. I'm good. I'm good. And I like when the djinn showed up. I thought that was really, really well done. I like the part when she comes back home and bitches to her neighbors. I quite enjoyed that scene. I guess my problem with this is I just didn't do enough for me. I think it's a good film, but it just, I don't know what I was looking for. I'm an action guy. I'm a deep drama. I'm not a big drama guy, but I'll watch them if I think the dialogue's good. I think the dialogue was just a little too plain for me at times. Like, I felt Tilda's character didn't have enough to offer me. Idris was fine. But I just felt Tilda needed to do more. Because she sounds, even at the beginning when she's talking about herself, she sounds boring. Like, I mean, it's great. But, I mean, everything with Idris in the bottle, absolutely great. Those stories are good. Kept my interest. And I got to say, I like the ending. I'll give the ending full credit. I did enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, this one, I went for George Miller. I wanted to see a George Miller film, and I got one. It, like you said, it is gorgeous. It is so beautifully shot. The special effects are wonderfully rendered. I had a little issue with the story aspect. I don't think I like what her final wish was. I don't want to spoil it for Kevin, but her final wish, I wasn't sure that character would wish for that. But thinking back, it starts off with her in the voiceover saying, "This story is incredibly true. You probably won't believe it unless I tell it as a fairy tale." And if you think of it as a fairy tale, it often does and wishes like her final wish. I loved that she was very hesitant about the wishes to begin with. She's like, maybe you're a trickster god. I've read so many stories about trickster gods and monkey's paws. And, you know, if I wish for something, it'll have undue consequences. I love that whole aspect of it. And I thought Tilda Swinton and Idris Elba together, they were wonderful. That their acting was just absolutely fantastic. So yeah, really my only issue is with that final wish. Or maybe it was her second wish. I'm not sure which wish it was, but I do think that it's one. I'm not sure if I love it or if I think it's just really good. I don't think it'll make my top 10 of the year, but top 20 for sure. I think it is just a gorgeous film with two really strong actors in it.
Okay. Anybody buy anything this week? Anybody watch any TV they want to talk about? Doug, nothing?
TV-wise, I just started a show on Hulu called The Reboot.
I saw an ad for that.
It's actually quite wonderful. It's made by the creator of Modern Family, a show I could not stand.
I think it's on Disney Plus here.
But it's about a reboot of a 80s sitcom where they bring back all the original actors, Keegan-Michael Key, Judy Greer, Johnny Knoxville, Rachel Bloom plays the writer who wants to bring the show back. The twist is her father is played by Paul Reiser. He's the original creator of the show. It's actually very funny. It's really good. I would highly recommend the show, The Reboot.
Kevin?
Well, I watched Andor the other day, the first three episodes.
I've seen one.
Andor, and I like it. It's a slow burn for the first arc, but it really sets things up. It's something like nothing we've seen in Star Wars since A New Hope and Rogue One.
Cool.
The ideal of a you know, economically poor ends of the Empire. In fact, it's so poor that you don't even see the Empire in the first three episodes.
Good.
You know, you're dealing with the local police force. And, you know, what causes people to become terrorists? What causes people to rebel? And I think that's where we're at with Andor. You see, he's just a guy that lives in this area and stuff happens that leads him to fight back. And along the way, you know, he catches the attention of people who are looking for people like him. I like that. And She-Hulk, of course, I'm enjoying.
Yes.
Rings of Power, House of the Dragon. They're all good.
Okay, House of the Dragon, I'm on episode 2. Haven't watched Rise of Power. She-Hulk's amazing. I finished all 4 episodes of Stargirl because I love Stargirl.
Yeah, Stargirl's
great. And that's about it. Until I finally get my TV room back, everything, I think we're done. If they make it,
we'll watch it.
Yeah, if we get to a Blu-ray player.